Well, he's from Philadelphia. That's Michael about Philadelphia.
Elliot. He's from Russia.
And
he told me the Israelis were in that
interview. He's from Philadelphia. He's from a conservative background.
Right, he was very much involved with the Soviet Jewry.
Right, no, he's a good person. He's a good person, but he's conservative, period. Okay, we're building up here. We're building up. Today is the 13th of December, 2010. Monday, a very rainy Monday, and you fellas who don't daven early have no idea what it was like going to shul at 5:15 this morning, and you can't go up from Berlin to Chalap. The trees have all fallen down, and getting to Gris was like swimming through a pool, but thank God we're alive and kicking. And I have to thank my student in America, Isaac Sutton, who gave me a big umbrella as a gift. And I used that umbrella today and had nachat. Now, today's very fascinating again. I'm building into the seminar. I'm coming into contemporary times today.
Did you say something about the statement made by the rabbis about property
claims? You don't know about now? Look, I understand what they're upset about. They're upset about that the Arabs, if you're aware of Jaffa, what's going on in Jaffa and Lod, the Arabs are brought into Jewish neighborhoods. And they don't want mixed neighborhoods. They let the Arabs live in their part of the neighborhood and we live in our part. The reason they're worried is there is a problem of a certain degree of intermarriage, that these girls are caught up with nice, handsome Arab boys. And you read about it with Pilim. However, if you're asking me whether the statement was politically wise, I would say absolutely not. You can't, there's a din today, Mishum Eva. If the Achronim were Matir, doing every type of operation on Shabbos, Mishum Eva, so Alacha Kama Vakama to publish an ad like this when the whole world is looking and our own liberal Jews are the first to yell, shout, scream, is not that intelligent, to put it mildly. But, it has to be handled educationally. Can it be handled? Can you influence? I hope so. I'm a great believer in education. But that's what I understand, motivated.
I think you're more concerned about the immigrants from Africa.
Motivated. Well, the immigrants from Africa present the real problem, that my grandson is down at the Egyptian border. And he said he had no Shabbos. He said it was terrible. I said, what do you mean terrible? He said the whole Shabbos, he was out scouting. I said, what do you mean scouting? He said, the Egyptians aren't the problem. We waved to the Egyptian soldiers, they waved back, there's no problem. They're looking for these Africans who are trying to infiltrate the country. And there's a real problem, because you're talking about millions and millions who want to come to Israel. And take a look what happened to the center of Tel Aviv, the central bus terminal, that area. You think you're in an African country? Have you been there lately? You can walk about 5-6 blocks, and it's like walking through Cape Town. Everything is run down, everything is second rate, everything is in a dilapidated condition. So there are real worries here. But I don't know, I thought it's more not the foreigners, I thought it's more the problem of Tzfat, where the Arabs today fill half the Tzfat college, 50%. All right, this is a problem. If you want a Jewish state and you want Jews to be able to talk to their neighbors and intermingle and drink together, everything we spoke about yesterday, and ultimately marry. And this is a real problem. I don't know what the solution is, but issuing a chayrim in public, it's not politically wise, in my opinion.
You're being nice.
It's not politically. Well, no, but you have to understand their motives. Rav Shmuel Eliyahu is not. He's a Talmud Chacham. He's the Yerei Shemayim. I saw other people signed on. Rav Simcha Kohn signed on, Rav Simcha Cook, he removed the signature when Rav Yashiv came out against it. Today, Rav Avadja came out against it. So they understand the problem, but it's not the way to handle it. What is the way to handle it? the letting in the Africans wholesale, you understand, the Yishai is not entirely wrong. Everyone came down very hard on Yishai. He's not entirely wrong. And with the Arabs, I want to put it a little differently. Why can't we Jews buy homes in Shechem? Why can't we live in Ramallah? You understand? Why can't we live in Saudi Arabia? Why can't we live in Kuwait? Why can't we live in Abu Dhabi? About the only Arab state that we can live in today is Iran. And I don't have to tell you what life is like in Iran. Okay, but anyway, it's...
The world doesn't want to hear about those things. The world only...
I agree with you. Right, I agree with you. That's why I...
Israel for racism, causing problems with the Arabs.
Right. The world doesn't... Exactly.
Civil rights.
Exactly. So that's the exact approach I will take when I'm asked a question in America. I'm going to turn around and say, before you ask me about Israel, why don't we discuss Saudi Arabia and how many Jews and Catholics and Protestants live there? Okay, anyway, but halakha l'maisa, it was not politically correct to do what they did, in my opinion, and we have to think of a way with education and the government, with the millions that want to come in. This is a frightening problem because they can overrun the country. Now, let me just pick up where we left off. We have women rabbis. Look what's happening. At that point, the head of the seminary, we spoke about Dr. Gershon Cohn, he has to resign. Ill health overtakes him. He's in a wheelchair. He cannot function. And when Dr. Cohn resigns, the New York Times, I'm quoting the 13th of June, 1985, this is 2 years after they started ordaining women or accepting women into the rabbinic school, he boasts to the world that his greatest accomplishment was ordaining the first conservative woman rabbi. It was from his wheelchair on May 12th that Dr. Cohn ordained Rabbi Amy Eilberg at a commencement exercise on the campus of the 99-year-old seminary at 3080 Broadway at 122nd Street. He rejected assertions made by some Orthodox Jewish leaders who said Dr. Cohn brought the seminary closer ideologically to the Reform movement. Quote, "We have interpreted halacha as we understand it," he said. "We walk in the footsteps of tradition." And here you have Dr. Gershon Cohn. Write those words down, because you hear them repeated today in many Orthodox circles. We have interpreted halacha as we understand it. We walk in the footsteps of tradition.
You are laying the groundwork for an onslaught on COVID.
It could be, Right? For a man who so criticized Professor Shaul Lieberman, it is hard for me to understand how you called the Rebbe unfair for being a loyal disciple of the Rav. When you apologize to Rav Shaul Lieberman, then you have a right to criticize me for perhaps laying the groundwork for why every YU student rabbi reached Israeli, what do they call it, Soha. We have to be very careful in how we innovate. Now,
I had a meeting last week with Amy.
Yeah, I know, I'm going to get to it. Not to, if I don't get to it then, I get to it next time. I'm well aware of it. Now, more than that, you see, the world is starting to, the fences are starting to break down. Reform, already, as we said, in the 60s into the 70s, the call was issued. We need more tradition. We need shmuel ceremony. Tkasim datiyim. The conservatives now have broken a barrier with women. And in 1985, for the first time, the head of the rabbinical assembly is invited to speak at the Reform Rabbinical Convention, and for the first time, invited to speak at the Rabbinical Council of America convention. And when he speaks at the Reformed Conversion, and this is an article by Rabbi Miller's first cousin, Ari Goldman, Yeshiva College graduate, very insightful article. And Rabbi Alexander Shapiro of the Conservative Rabbinate gets up in front of the Reform rabbis and says to them, it's time that you reverse yourself and return to Jewish tradition, particularly on the patrilineal issue. Because the patrilineal issue, you see, let me explain something, and this comes up later in the article too, let me explain it black and white. What each of us does in our private home is our business. You keep kosher, you keep kosher. You don't keep kosher, you don't keep kosher. You observe Shabbos, you don't observe Shabbos. What you do in your bedroom is your business. You go to mikveh, you don't go to mikveh. It doesn't affect other Jews. It doesn't affect other Jews. What I just said is not totally correct. There's a slight issue with a woman not going to mikveh pagum. We dealt with that in class. But halacha lemaisa, if a woman does not go to mikveh, the child is pagum, but pagum has no halakhic implications. Fine. When it comes to patrilineal, you affect every other Jew. Because if you're not Jewish, the other person can't marry you. Last year, I told you, right here in the Kollel, right here in this building, there was a dinner. Reformed, conservative, Orthodox students studying in Israel for the rabbinate, a dinner sponsored by some branch of the Jewish agency, from which Chris Kollel gets money, and Rabbi Brandon considers it very important that our students participate. And I was in England at the time, but I have to be honest with you, I personally would not have participated even if I was here, but that's my personal feeling. I was in England at the time. When I got back, one of my Talmidim, or a few of my Talmidim, told me that this woman came over to them, and she said to them, I imagine in your eyes I'm not even Jewish, let alone a rabbi. So the boys from Reed said, what do you mean? She said, well, my father is Jewish, my mother is not. So I asked my Talmidim, what did you answer? They hem, they hawed. I said, I'm not proud of you. I would have said to her, dear young lady, you're absolutely correct. In our eyes, you are not Jewish. Halacha demands obedience. We do not measure it with Western standards or criteria that the New York Times would give us. Devar Hashem zu halacha, and a divine system we cannot change. You don't have to be mean, you don't have to be caustic, you don't have to maledict her, but you have to tell the truth. You don't double talk. Say that. Let her say that to me. I'll handle her. Believe me. Fight with the Yankees playing the Red Sox next year. There'll be plenty of fights. You know what's going on. Who the Red Sox signed, who the Yankees didn't sign yet. All right. Fascinating. But I'm not looking for a fight. But I'm looking for expressing dignity to Torah Judaism. The Rav said he never spoke down to a conservative rabbi, but he never misled him. You have to say the truth. So that's not the only topic. There's another topic which is much worse, because the truth of the matter is many a person was raised as a Reformed Jew, a conservative Jew. They came to Israel, and I don't have to tell you the miracle of the Baal Tshuva movement. See, again, you fellas who have grown up with the Baal Tshuva movement don't realize what we have today. Those of us who grew up in the 50s, we're overwhelmed by what we see. You go to South Africa today, an unbelievable, powerful, observant Jewish community, Shmirat Shabbat, 100%, Kashrut, Tarat Mishpacha. They told me when I was in South Africa, 90% of the observant Jews are Balei Tshuva. I mean, think of that statistic, 90%. I think I told you, the Chevra Kadisha, the head of the Chevra Kadisha, who is FFB, told me he has a rule, no one can work on the Chevra Kadisha until they've been Shomer Shabbos for 10 years. So I asked him, why do you have such a rule? He said to me, very simple, we don't want it to be a passing fancy. And if you look into the New York Times today, in the Metro section, there's an entire article on Chevra Kadisha in New York and how they're training the new generation to do a proper Tahara. There are two articles about Jews in the Metro today. One on the kosher culinary school and a contest they're running, the only kosher culinary school outside the state of Israel, so they claim, and the other one on Chevra Kadisha. So, if you were raised Reform conservative, you find out that your mother converted with a Reformed rabbi, with a conservative rabbi, you have an easy solution. You reconvert. And many a reconversion has been done in the state of Israel. And I want to tell you, Zalop Hashut, you need a rav who knows America, knows halacha, to decide whether a bracha should be made. Because many a conservative conversion cannot be dismissed with the abad. At least conservative conversions out of the 50s and the 60s. Right, Michael, you know what I'm talking about. I can tell you halacha lemaisa. I discussed this with the Rav. I had this halacha lemaisa in Maplewood, South Orange in the 60s. You can't dismiss it. Again, there's a lachatchilana b'diyeved, but lachatchila certainly not. B'diyeved, mendaf's a good clarin if the mother, and then there's a homach like a svadim ashkenazim, but okay, there's a b'diyeved there too. That's a different story. I know that. Okay. However, there's another area where tragedy is tragedy, as I've told you. If a woman doesn't get a get, the whole problem of mamzeret. And that problem is real, because many a time, for the sake of argument, people got married in Israel, got married by the rabbinate, they go to America, they're totally irreligious. You understand? It just happened to me last week. One of the places I'll be visiting in America is Las Vegas. So they want me to speak there. In Las Vegas, a whole group of Israelis who evidently have done very well. So this shul is trying Mekarevo come. Fine. So they told them, a rabbi is coming from Israel, blah, blah, and he can give a shir in Hebrew. So the rabbi there in Las Vegas looks at topics I suggested, and he sees the topic Tzahal run al pi halacha. It's a fascinating topic, so he tells the Israelis, they hear the word halacha, chas v'chalil, we don't want anything about religion. So and this reminds me of Nebuch, the rabbinical joke of the rabbi who the Balabatim say, rabbi, you're preaching about Shabbat and Kashrut, we don't observe those things. Don't bore us. So the poor rabbi says, what should I preach about? They say, preach about Yiddishkeit. So these guys don't want anything with Yiddishkeit, anything with halacha. So Malcolm, my wife, saved the situation. She pops up and says, talk about the Mossad in Russia. Oh, they heard that topic, Mossad in Russia, they bought it. Danny, smoke a lie. I am going to hit them so hard with Yiddishkeit, they will not know what hit them. But the topic is the Mossad in Russia. And we'll do justice to the topic, but nevertheless. Now, Mamzeret affects every Jew. In other words, these Israelis go to America. There, they don't have to deal with the rabbinate. They get divorced. They go to a Reform rabbi, go to a conservative rabbi, don't go to any rabbi, get a civil divorce. The woman remarries. The kids wind up balei tshuva in osameach, and the kids are mamzerim. Okay? And this affects every single Jew. Because you're walking down the street, and you see this beautiful girl, this intelligent girl, this nice girl, this pious girl. You're taken in by her. You propose marriage. Little do you know, you're proposing marriage to a mamzeret. And then this is a terrible, terrible problem. So he pleads with the Reform, come back to tradition. Who is head? I mean, it's amazing the quotes here. Who is head of the reform movement at that time. Do you remember the name Rabbi Alexander Schindler? Do you know who Rabbi Alexander Schindler was? He was a descendant of Hasidisha families, Hasidisha Rebbeim. He came to America as a little kid, if I'm not mistaken, saved from the Holocaust. He came before the Holocaust, and that's what saved him. He was from a Pelisha family, and Rabbi Schindler answers them, it would be better for Rabbi Shapiro to lead his movement into the future than ours into the past. And this Rabbi Shapiro, but you see, he's trying to reach out. He's trying to find common ground with the reform. He later addresses the RCA. Louis Bernstein was president at the time. I think it was his second presidency. Louis Bernstein, again, it's a name that to you already is distant and ancient. To me, it's living yet. Rabbi Louis Bernstein was president of Rabbinical Council of America three times. He was a great activist. He was the head of the Mizrahi in America. He taught Jewish history at Yeshiva College. He had a doctorate from Bernard Rebbe Graduate School. He published a book that you're all going to have to refer to if you do any research on American Jewish history, The Emergence of the Rabbinical Council of America, The Emergence of the American Orthodox Rabbinate. It's about the early years of RCA, Rabbinical Council of America. The book is invaluable because the documents it quotes we no longer have access to. And it gives you stories and stories that recreate the 30s, the 40s, the 50s, into the 60s. That was his doctorate, published in the States, a very valuable volume for understanding what went on. So he is invited to RCA. There was a lot of opposition. Rabbi David Hollander was furious. Idiots is laughing already. Louis Bernstein had a lot of support from what you would call the more innovative element of the RCA. And Shapiro gets up and he makes two pleas from the RCA. One, to form a joint based in with the conservative movement. The whole issue of Mamzeret. Shapiro is honest enough to acknowledge, and don't forget what I'm telling you now because this will come up later today, Shapiro was honest enough to acknowledge that the joint Beitin issue would solve Mamzeret. The other plea he made was that the Rabbinical Council of America, being open-minded, being decent, being upright, being Americanized, believing in a fair play and democracy, get us recognized in the State of Israel. And Rabbi Bernstein responds, when it comes to the joint basin, I absolutely agree with you that we should look into it. I'm going to appoint a committee. As far as recognition in Israel, Rabbi Bernstein totally refuses. The unity of the Jewish community in Israel is dependent upon one standard in halacha for family purity, yichus as we know it, and he cannot play ball with the conservative movement. Obviously,
what was the date of this?
This is 1985, the convention in 85, and the article I'm quoting from, I lived it, I remember it well. The article, I mean, students asked me, I was already teaching and on a high level, and people wanted my opinion. Yeah, the July 2nd, 1985 is the New York Times article by Ari Goldman. And Louis Bernstein, I remember, stood very firm, very strongly. And the conservative movement, of course, reacted. If we can't be recognized in Israel, then we're not going to cooperate on the Beit Din, and it became a dead letter. By the mid-80s, what the Rav and Professor Liebman wanted to do in the 50s was an impossibility, because the conservative movement had moved so far away already that within the Orthodox element, even for the sake of stopping Mamzeret, there was very fervent opposition to cooperation. With all this happening, the seminary elects a new chancellor, Dr. Isma Sosh. You all recognize the name. He remains chancellor well into 2008, I believe it is. Isma Sosh was elected as a more traditional candidate. People associated with the seminary were worried that under Cohn and the ordination of rabbis and smacking Professor Lieberman's memory, they need someone more conservative with a small c. Quoting from the Jerusalem Post now, the 6th of March, 1986, Sosh said his greatest challenge would be, quote, to reassert the legitimacy of the middle, to argue for moderation, pluralism, for somehow lowering the debacle level of the rhetoric. Sosh supports the ordination of women, but strongly opposes the principle of patrilineal descent. And
he never made anyone happy.
Well, he was more traditional than Cohn. He was more traditional than Cohn. He tried to veer the seminary back to what he called a more centrist position. But you see, by this time, the battle, the influence, the Americanism, the liberalism, the issues that had so conquered the college campuses were so deeply rooted that there was little Cohn could do. He was not traditional enough for the more traditional element, and he was not reform enough for the more reform element in the seminary. And as you know, Sosh himself, in great frustration with the turn of the new century, said in public, our greatest mistake was to permit the driving to shul on Shabbat. And essentially, I think what he was saying, and I know this from people who know his family and his children are all observant, what he was saying was, we broke down the halachic wall. To justify driving to shul on Shabbat is impossible halachically. This is Isurim Dioraita. When we broke that wall down, everything followed. And I want to show you something amazing, and once again get Yitzchak upset because I'm giving a little overture to what happens. Look, patrilineal descent becomes a major issue. It's on the floor of every convention. Let's look at patrilineal descent logically. As Americans, as college graduates, as liberals, as readers of the New York Times, I just heard Rakefet back in 69 telling his class, my dear students, since I came in Aliyah, I have given up three great loves of my life: American ice cream, the New York Yankees, and the New York Times. I just visited with Rakefet in the year 2011. The ice cream in Israel, he claims, is better than any ice cream he's eaten in any place in the world, from Russia, Marushina, as they call it there, to the United States. Ribbono shel Olam, what you have available here, Kol Tam Gan Eden. The New York Yankees, you go to the website, you have it all. You want to be a Boston Red Sox fan, you go to their website, it's mind-boggling what's available. You don't have to pay a penny. You can follow the game while it's in process. They tell you who's at bat. They show you what pitch came in. It's mind-boggling. You can waste all your time. The New York Times, Rakefet just quoted from it in a shir in Jerusalem on this Monday morning. So, you know, let's look at it with take away Torah, take away all our Jewish thinking. How can you not have patrilineal descent? A man and woman today are totally equal. There's not even a concept of a man and woman. Two men want to get married, let them get married. Two women want to get married, let them get married. The only concept we have today is a human being. You have a mind, either God created you, or Darwin, or whatever happened, you happened to come about, whatever. Evolution. You have a mind. What's the difference? We're all equal. How can you be opposed to patrilineal descent? How dare you say that a woman is better than a man? That's just as chauvinistic as claiming a man is better than a woman. Am I right or wrong? From that point of view, isn't that the logical conclusion that you have to reach? I want to tell you, many rabbis in the conservative movement think that way. Here's an article quoting, this is already 1986, Jerusalem Post talks about the convention of RCA. The issue of patrilineal descent was brought up, and the rabbinical assembly voted 235-92 to uphold the traditional determination of Jewishness exclusively by matrilineal descent. And the world was shocked. More than one quarter of the rabbis voted in favor of patrilineal descent. And that is in the conservative movement. And they interview, I don't want to go through the whole article, but they interview the rabbis, and you can see where the water has swept the dam away. The water has flown and overtaken the bridge. When you're exposed to these values, Ger betosha v'nochi imachem, ultimately, if you don't keep the fence up, if you don't keep the mechitza up, if you don't keep the mechitza, if you don't keep the bulwark strong, it totally erodes. And here you see it. And I want to tell you something. Shooting ahead into the future, I want you to know that in the Rabbinical Council of America, which I am a member, and which endless students who went to Gris Kollel are members, there is a very strong minority which supports innovation. That will explain to you why Rabbi Irwin Greenberg is still a member of RCA, while Rabbi Avi Weiss is still a member of RCA. And at each convention now, when these major issues come up, you will have a very vociferous, it is a minority, but a very dynamic and articulate minority who will speak in terms of change, of innovation, of gradual development. And these people are not totally opposed, if opposed at all, to all that has happened with the development, which Avi Weiss, and I cite him, and I don't want to cite Chobevei Torah, because the more extreme development is with Rabbi Avi Weiss. And these people, if not behind them 100%, are behind them 80%, 75%. And it's amazing that in the conservative movement, at that early stage, more than one quarter supported patrilineal descent. And again, I say to you, from a Toshav point of view, from a scholarly, enlightened, modern, sophisticated, contemporary individual, how can you not have patrilineal? A man and a woman are equal. We're all human beings. This is the New York Times of 2011. Fascinating. Fascinating. That's 1986.
Just an interesting comment.
Yeah.
In the 50s and 60s and into the 70s,
Right.
The overwhelming majority of rabbinical students at the seminary
were coming out of
coming out of Ramah, and they were coming out of USY. Once you got into the 80s,
right,
a vast change occurred, and they were coming out of the academic programs,
right,
of universities.
With no background, background.
With no background, but they were being greatly influenced.
Right, right.
By their professors.
We're going to get to that.
Liberal universities.
We're going to get to
and
that.
This was a major reason why this was happening.
Right, right. We're going to absolutely get to that. You're absolutely right that Yeshiva College, by 1980, was no longer a feeder school for JTS.
I mean, the Ramah products were much more traditional.
Of course, the Ramah products were Shomer Shabbos, where came from a totally different background, or were exposed to a totally different background. But you got to remember, until 1980, 40% to 50% of the JTS students were yeshiva graduates. Yeshiva College, Chaim Berlin, Torah Vadas, RJJ, Ne Yisrael, one after another. They supplied the seminary with endless students. But we'll come to it. I'm going to give you a quote about that. But I want to come back to the mid-80s, because you'll see what happens next. They say it goes step by step by step. Yeah.
With 90 rabbis, this isn't a matter of having just three rabbis write an opinion?
I don't understand.
You know, when you had a tshuva, if three rabbis wrote an opinion, then that would be,
Right.
So they couldn't do
no,
that.
No. This was not on the Committee on Jewish Law. This was at the convention of the Rabbinic Assembly. Committee on Jewish Law, as far as I know, it was always a unanimous decision that you cannot have patrilineal. It's only matrilineal. And all the sources indicate that. But this is the rabbis at large. You're not dealing here with the most learned. You're dealing here with the masses. Now, one step further. Go into a synagogue. What goes on in a synagogue? What are the positions of importance? The president, the board of trustees, in a conservative temple, and today in 90% of Orthodox synagogues, women can hold whatever office they want. There are synagogues where they don't allow the woman to be a president or vice president. I've spoken about that. I've told you what I believe, what I was told was the Rebbe's opinion. That's certainly the opinion that if people ask me, I will tell them to follow. On the other hand, if a student will say to me, Rebbe, if I don't allow this woman to become president, I'll lose the shtela, I'll lose my panasa, let the woman become president, but just explain to her she can't make announcements, she can't preach, she can't speak during the davening. And if the woman insists that she has to make the announcements, let her make the announcements at Kiddush. But all of you understand that there's no holds barred. A woman can be a macher in a synagogue. What else goes on in a synagogue? A woman gets aliyah. Aliyah reading, fine. Women can get aliyah. The Gutarian, it's not a problem. The Gemara permits it. I don't have to tell you. Not a problem. Rabbis? No. For the conservative movement. So I'm talking about the conservative temple. And by the mid-80s, women were getting aliyah. Many, not in all conservative temples, but in many. To be a rabbi, you now have women being ordained. But wait a minute, there's one other task in the synagogue that may be the most important one of all. If you go into a conservative temple where most people don't know how to daven, aren't fluent in davening, aren't fluent in Hebrew, the chazan, and a woman can't be a chazanit. Now, halachically speaking, a woman's becoming a chazanit is infinitely more halachically questionable than her becoming a rabbi. To quote Rakefet, a woman can be a Hasidic Rebbe, she can't be a rabbi. And I proved it, you know that. I've yet to find one person who disagrees with me. Because as I said, in the Haredi world, it's even easier for her to be a Hasidic Rebbe. And I don't have to go any further than Rebbetzin Kanievsky. You don't have to go back to the Maid of Lodmi and go back to history. You have a living example. My wife this morning is going to hear a speaker by the name of Tamima Rothschild Mizrahi. if I had the name right, it's Kimimat Rachat Mizrachim. She's already more in, not the Haredi world. She's in the Tzioni Dati camp. She's a graduate of Chorev. She was a classmate of one of my daughters. Everyone tells me she is a Rebbe. She's a lawyer. Gave it up. Teaches, speaks. Brilliant. Sources, analysis, inspiration. So what's the problem? Rakevet, why are you opposed to a woman being a rabbi? A Chassidic Rebbe, you're willing to let her be. Your wife is going to get a bracha this morning. Fine. Rabbi Simkanievsky, men and women stand on line to get a bracha from her. You all know, with the wine, with the bench, with the licht benching, I mean, I'm not so happy with all this going on. But you all understand, this is mentality. Not everyone can think intellectually. Not everyone can be a mere yeshiva boy. Those of you that heard my lecture yesterday, was enough food for thought in that lecture to last you for the next 49 years. Not everyone can go around with it, sit it in, and clean shaven and be kulo kodesh and kulo Torah. Okay. Tabiach. So why can't she be a rabbi? So I explained, they gave a whole shiur last year. Because the title rabbi implies she's discharging rabbinic functions. Rabbinic functions mean a beitin for a get, signing on a get, being an aide for a get, etc., etc., an aide at a kedushin. Wherever you need a dut shel kiyum dava, not shel bira dava, a woman cannot give eidut. Now, I need not tell you that a rabbi, when you use the title, it means you can discharge all the tasks of a rabbi. To give a woman a title rabbi is misleading. And I have other problems from the point of view of sneer, a woman getting up and preaching in public, etc., etc., in the middle of davening. There's a time when our heads should be free of sexual tension as best that we can manage it. I'm not opposed to sexual tension because I believe it's the greatest blessing God gave the world, and for every little syllable I just said, I can bring every Maimon Chazal in the world to prove it, and you know my lectures, and you know the Gemara in Yuma, the Gemara in Sanhedrin, and the Medrash Rabbah and Bereishit, etc., etc. I'm speaking Divrei Torah, not foolishness. Sex, thank God, is here to stay. If we didn't have sex, none of us would be sitting here. Plain and simple. Who would get married? The Medrash says it beautifully. Watch, you got to get married, support a woman, build a house, have all those problems, raise kids. Kids are a pain in the neck at times. You know that. I hear the Rav crying on tape how kids grow up, and he says they reach a point in life where they forget they had parents. And I was telling my grandson, who's one of my grandsons who's a newlywed, I said, that's what life is all about. You're slowly shifting into your own building, your own concept, your own friends, and your parents, your grandparents, everything else recedes. And that's normal, thank God. But you have to be able to live with it. A woman can't accept that. A woman cannot accept that. It's the most difficult thing in the world for her. Look into Family Redeemed, the Rav's drasha on the first jotzite of the Rebbetzin. It is the most brilliant drasha I ever heard in my life. And a woman, but a man, an intelligent man, can accept it more easily. Although even for a father, at times it's difficult. And as Rakefet says, I'm at the age already where my children tell me what to do, thank God. You have to listen to your children. All right, so a woman is not is now a rabbi in a conservative temple. A chazanit? There? You can't just say, well, she's a rabbi who can't do all the functions. Chazanit is getting up and davening. In order to daven, she's a shliach tzibur. In order to be a shliach tzibur, she has to be part of a minyan, she has to have a chiyuv, she has to be motziyu. All of this doesn't apply to a woman. Mitzvah taseh she has man grama. She can't be counted for a minyan. There is no way in the world that a woman can be a chazanet al pi halacha and be motzi a woman. Along comes one of the seminary faculty members, and I have to see, I'm waiting for Yitzchak to lend me the book, Rabbi Dr. Professor Joel Roth, who I know, and I can testify from what I see of him, he's a from Jew. And he writes an essay in the 70s, the gist of it being, as I see it quoted, that if a woman accepts upon herself the responsibilities of mitzvah, I say, she has man grama. She puts on talit and tefillin. She davens 3 times a day. She is like a man. She can be a chazanet. That's what it says. And they quote him, Professor Sorge, who's now the head of the seminary, who has a strong traditional streak in him. When a man understands that Chilul Shabbos is Chilul Shabbos, I salute him. That's the touchstone that shows you know what halacha is about. I don't have to tell you. And here, February 6, 1987, I'm quoting from the Jerusalem Post, women cantors at JTS to get full status. And they quote Professor Sorge, this decision is really a continuation of the decision taken in 1983 to ordain women rabbis. What I have done now is merely to apply the decision of 1983 to the Cantors Institute. You have to understand, Source did this basically unilaterally. It wasn't a big convention, it wasn't a big vote. Just as women can get smicha, women can become chazaniyot. And he says there makes it possible for women to change their status in Jewish law on the basis of equal obligation. And he quotes a halachic responsa. It should be halachic responsum. The Jerusalem Post has made a mistake. And little Aaron Rakefet as a stylist has now corrected it. By the esteemed Rabbi Joel Roth in the early 1970s, stipulating that women who voluntarily take on the time-honored obligations of traditional Judaism, such as wearing talit and tefillin, and attending 3 prayer minyanim each day, can be halachically accepted as shlichot tzibur. And you see what's happened now? You've gone a big step further. This is much more difficult than women rabbis. Women chazaniyot. Yitzchak, have you read the Tshuva of Roth? What's the basis?
I looked it up in the internet.
No, but you have it in
I have the book, but I don't know if that's in there.
How is it not in there? This is most important Tshuva. Everyone quotes it.
Well, the other thing important is the rabbis. He gave them the head to do.
The rabbis, I'm telling you, doesn't take. If she can be a Hasidic Rebbetzin in the Haredi world, so she, all right, for the conservatives, she can be a rabbi.
A typical conservative Jew doesn't know halacha. Oh, a woman rabbi is a lot bigger of a deal to them.
I don't know. Halachically, you'll see what I'm saying. Okay, I'll show you what I mean in a minute, but I want you to understand what he based it. Now, you know what's very fascinating? So they went to the women. And I don't want to probe into your personal religious observance. How many of you are makpid to daven 3 times a day with a minyan when you're not in yeshiva? Some of you know even yeshiva mod davet min bam koisel. You that expression, they don't even know what I'm saying. But a fellow here told me he missed minyan that morning. He davened. I said, you're not saying it right. He said he davened in his dorm room or something like that. That's not the way. The expression used to be when the Rebbe asked you, where did you daven today? So you would tell the Rebbe, I davened by Kaiso. I davened at the Western Wall. But what does he mean, he davened by Kaiso? He davened at the wall in his apartment. You understand? But to make it sound good for the Rebbe, because in shul you generally don't daven at the wall. You're davening, you know, everyone's davening facing the other
side.
But when you may want the Rebbe to feel good, you would say, ich hab gedaven beim Kaisel. But the only problem is what Yehuda is saying is in Chutzlaritz, if the Rebbe was smarter, he'd say, ooh, Eva Zay Kumtai Hashalom Aleichem, he returned from Israel that morning. My first Rebbe of Michal Katz, oh, did I love him, Zay Chesadik Lebracha. So I had a class.
Mickey.
I know Reb Michal. Mickey Katz is right, but Reb Michal. So he was the son of the chief rabbi, Rabbi Reuben Katz, and a wonderful wife, she should live and be well, Hindi, wonderful, also had big yichus, wonderful lady, wonderful people. So I had a classmate, Izzy Scheinfeld. I don't know where Izzy is today. He's a nice guy, but he always had things on his mind and his pockets. One time the Rebbe made him empty out his pocket. He must have had 100 different things in his pockets, every gadget you could imagine. He was a kid. So one time he finishes Shmoneh Esrei, we were davening Mincha, and Reb Michel says to him, Izzy, Shalom Aleichem. So Izzy says, Rebbe, I was here the whole time. What's the Shalom Aleichem? He says, when you daven, your mind wandered all over the world. You were thinking of this and that. And he says, Shalom Aleichem, welcome back. So when the kid tells the Rebbe, come daven on Kaisel, all right. So, okay. So I don't want to end this. I am pretty certain not every kid in graduate of Gurs is makpid to catch a minion three times a day. All right. My personal life, some of you know that I haven't missed a minion, I don't know how many decades, but that's a different story. But all right, they're Jews. I know one Jew who comes shachris faithfully, never shows from Mincha Marav, davens in his house. I know a Jew down the block, as frum can be, he never davens even shachris with a minion. He's too, he wakes up too late, etc., etc. All right, so they ask the girls, Sosh says, I questioned the female cantorial students. The women made it clear to me, quote, they had no problem complying with the requirements of the Roth Tshuva, and in fact, they were conducting their lives in accordance with that Tshuva to begin with. Professor Sosh commented, after that meeting with these women and hearing that answer, a major impediment was removed. Now, I have...
Tzibur, it means davening three times a day.
He says three times a day with the minion, with the tzibur, that, not just three times a day. But they
makabel,
that they makabel on themselves that they're part of the minion three times a day. That's what the women answered him. Yeah. I know many women who daven three times a day, but they don't daven betzibur. Please, I see women. Huh? I just saw the other day, I was driving home from Har Nof, who was mamas after Shkia. I'd been to my daughter, I davened into that Boston at the Boston Shtibble, and I was driving back. I caught Marav in Givat Mordechai, because the traffic was terrible, so I said to Marco, let me stop and catch Marav. So as we're driving towards that long road from Har Nof, I don't know what the road is called, opposite the bakery, you're coming towards Rehov Herzl, I take a look, there's a car parked on the side and a woman is davening Mincha Shmoneh Esrei. You understand? So, all right, that's a woman who davens twice a day, maybe three times a day. I know that the Rav raised his daughters to daven three times a day. I know that, from what I'm told, I know Edith Nemanat over Lichtenstein three times a day. I imagine Atara Twesky, Dr. Atara, Dr. Tova, I imagine they daven three times a day, but they don't go to Minyan. But these women said, we put on talis, we put on tefillin, we go to Minyan, and Sosh made a ruling. This ruling created a tremendous outcry, because the halachic part of the conservative movement, that which was left, was up in arms. And here's where Ronald Price, our old friend, Rabbi Price, the head of the Union of Traditional Conservative Judaism, today it's traditional Judaism, they dropped the word conservative, he came out and he bitterly and caustically attacked Sosh, attacked the conservative movement. He says, we hoped when Sosh had become chancellor in 1986, he would slow the pace of liberal reform pushed by his predecessor, Dr. Gershenkorn. But now we see that our hopes were in vain, said Price. Now the sledgehammer approach, quote, to change is being continued. The decision on Cantus represents a breach of Jewish law that is more radical and more divisive than the decision to accept women as rabbis. Okay? So you see, the breach, 90% of the seminary followers are moving more left. Price now sees that the break is inevitable. But it's more than that. Watch. One of the most prominent conservative rabbis at that time was Rabbi Mordechai Waxman. I've mentioned this name before, the author of Tradition and Change.
Sir Greatneck?
Greatneck, Greatneck, New York. I met him a number of times. Well, fairly, in his own life, quite observant. The end with the rabbinate, he's no longer alive, I believe, but the end was sad. Yitz, I don't know if you're aware of this, that the Balabatan didn't want to give him a proper pension. He had a canvas after so many decades in a big conservative temple in a community like Great Neck, where your cousin is from. That's where your cousin started his journey to Yiddishkeit. So he had to knock on doors. They told me it was a disgrace. Never said. I said, you see, not only Orthodox rabbis go through hell when they retire, but take a look, a man who was an idol in the conservative, Rabbi Mordechai Waxman. Who didn't hear of Rabbi Mordechai Waxman? So he was consulted. There was this big storm. So, of course, the reporters went after him. How do you feel about this? And watch this quote. See what you pick up from it. Quote, I knew nothing of this until I read about it in the New York Times. I approve of women as candidates on both halachic and practical grounds, given the paucity of male cantors these days, but feel that before the seminary took such a radical step, there should have been a broader form for discussion. No, here you come to the other reality that we already mentioned, paucity of cantors. Go into the seminary today, the majority of the student body are women. Go into Hebrew Union College today, the majority of the student body are women. Why? That's a very simple answer. Women by nature are more spiritual. Man by nature is an animal. No, who says this? Sefer Chinuch, Brit Milah. You've looked up where he explains why a man needs a Brit Milah. Who says this? Now, Baron Soloveitchik gave an unbelievable shiur before Young Israel in the 1960s that later scientific research, Gili, proved to be absolutely correct. Articles I remember in Time magazine and Newsweek, a woman, due to her biological structure, subconsciously, psychologically, gets messages in her body that teach her life and death, cycle, God, creation, the finiteness of man. She is more spiritual by nature. A man, on the other hand, we're a bouvan, we're strong, conquer the world. When a man hits 40, suddenly he wakes up, his hair is starting to fall out. You understand? His strength is starting to ebb. He's suddenly getting a message that a woman got at the age of 12, at the age of 13. And Rabbi Soloveitchik said this. I couldn't believe it. Scientific research validated this approach. So, of course, if you're going to open the floodgate to rabbis, you're going to have more rabbis than female, than male. You want proof that I'm right? I told you this. I repeat it again. When I was in my heyday of all that teaching, I don't know how I did it. I was giving shiurim in Michlala, Machal, Gold, BMT, Grus, 18, 16 plus 12, 28, 32 hours a week.
And you walked?
32, I used to walk from Machon Gol. That's correct. I walked to Machon Gol.
But they didn't know why there was a snow when you came into the room.
Right, no.
You bought big bialys smothered with onions.
Right.
And said, if you guys want it, you got to walk to the shuk.
And I love to walk, and I used to walk to Machon Gol through the shuk. You remember? Oh, beautiful. But I would take a bus back because after I gave shay, I didn't have the energy. So. But I knew one thing. If I gave a Musa talk in Machon Gold, the girls walked out crying. this is a fact. It came back to me in England. They made a party. I was overwhelmed. They made a farewell dinner the night before we left. And woman after woman, grandmothers, got up and testified how I changed their lives as their Rebbe, Machon Gold or Machal. I mean, it was overwhelming to me, the gratitude that these fine ladies felt. Ashreini Shazachini Lakach. Pardon me for talking like a Galiziano. They don't even know what's going on there. It's lost on them, Yehuda, it's lost on them. What can I do? What can I do? If I give the same shayur to Yehuda and his classmates in BMT, the guys walked out laughing. And you could see the difference in spirituality right there. Now, the porcelain, can you imagine? This becomes a halachic reason for having female rabbis and female cantors. We don't have enough male cantors to go around. Now, I have to tell you, this may have been true in the 1980s. Today, I don't know what happened. There's such a rebirth of chazanut. Is it in America like this too, or only Israel? They have so many concerts here. People pay a fortune to go to hear chazanim. And, you know, people tell me, you've lived in Jerusalem 42 years, you never davened the Shabbos in the great synagogue in Yeshurun? You should hear the chazanim. I don't know, I'm a litvak. I'd rather daven up in an hour and a half and hear the words of Abaye and Rava, of Rabbi Meir, Rabbi Yehuda, of Shas and Paiskim. That's what we're here for. I'm soon making a siyum this week on Me'ilah. And I'm sailing into Kenum. I see Steinzel's did Kenum. I'm rubbing my chops to learn Kenum. Oh boy, if I understand it this time, I'll make a shechiyanu with the birds. Why, oh, have you learned Kenum? Oh, Danny, you gotta know what we're talking about. Anyway, take a look what has happened, how far we have gone. Ronald Price, Rabbi Price of the traditional breakaway, takes advantage of the women chazaniyat, and he goes public, syndicated columns all over the world, ripping the seminary apart. And I'm quoting to you, this is from Jewish Week, March 6th, 1987. When the Jewish Theological Seminary of America announced that it would certify women as cantors, it came as no surprise to most people. If women are already being ordained as rabbis, isn't it logical that they should be cantors as well? In secular terms, it is a logical progression. But in religious terms, it is a leap into the void. Certifying women as cantors is far more radical halakhically than the ordination of women as rabbis. And he quotes, this is quoting now against Rabbi Joel Roth. In fact, that's the Israel Frankis of the Jewish Theological Seminary Talmud faculty. You remember we had his name in that petition in favor of Professor Lieberman, has ruled that should a woman take an oath to keep all of the mitzvot incumbent on man, she nonetheless does not have the same obligation. That is because, he said, even from biblical times, she may have her oath and obligation annulled or privileged available only to a woman in this matter and impossible for a male. No, my dear students, he goes into lamdas, that I go even further, that she can take all the oaths in the world, but a woman remains a woman. She's not a man. She can't take on the chiyuv of a man. A man can't become a woman. A woman can't become a man in relation to halachic complications. And he comes here with a drei, that even if she should take it on, and even if she should make an oath, but she can always annul this oath. No, do you know how you're matir? How many of you have ever been on a base then for being matir in a darim outside of ever Rosh Hashanah? So I want to tell you, it's very, you have to find the petach, right? That's the, you have to find the petach. So I remember Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich. Again, I love to talk about Rabbi Yeruchim Gerelich because the Charedic world claims he never taught at Yeshiva University. I mean, it's beyond words. Well, I'm going to, gentlemen, Yitzchak, don't think that all this is just to be critical of Chovevei Torah. I'm also going to go crazy against the Charedi world and innovations and the harm it has caused us. So just relax yourself. Give the Rebbe a chance to get there in dignity. In dignity. That's what's important. So Rabbi Yeruchim had a terrible habit. He smoked. So and he knew he felt bad. You know, smoking is not good. We already knew it's not healthy. It's and it's only musa. You know, smoking is like liquor. It's like giving in to your base instincts. So he would always take a cigarette. Then a week too late, it daf matane design. No, how's he mataneda? You know, he wants to. He made a vow. He's not going to smoke anymore. He wants to get out of it. He wants to go back. So he grabbed three talmidim and he said, I never knew it would be so hard. Found the petach and mutulacha, we would say the nusach. Fine. One time, we had one talmid, Shaya Balin was one of a kind. And we're mataneda for Rabbi Yeruchim and Shaya says, Rebbe, head so good. Listen carefully. Damals in the Sheng Matigeven. About Sveitobo weapon does nishton up the Zelda Pesach. This time we were mata, but a second time we're not going to do it. So now, what would be the Petach for a woman? It's very simple. Well, I know what it's referring to. A woman say, I was makabal on myself to go to Minyan three times a day. That's before I was married, before I had children. Now I have to be home, I have little children, it's hard, I have to be mataneder, I can't keep to it, I can't say shmonesrei, the kid starts to cry, the kid is jumping, you follow me Yitzchak, the kid is jumping out of the crib, I have to change a diaper, she'll find the hatineder. But I tell you, with all due respect to Rabbi Frankus, the problem is a lot more basic, even with all the Kabbalah in the world, and even if it's a neder al dat rabbim, and even if it's a neder shein lo hafara, And whatever you want to say, but a woman can't become a man. And this Chazoniyot was the absolute breaking point where the seminary now has moved beyond any vestige of halachic commitment. 1986. Michael, why? You feel it was long lost out in the field.
It was
the people out.
In the RA,
yeah, I understand.
In terms of dealing, first of all, I only use Philadelphia as my paradigm. The majority of Philadelphia shuls were very traditional and slow to change.
Correct.
And they wouldn't even consider a woman. And even today,
the
large shuls in Philadelphia have men as their chazanim without even considering a woman. On the other hand, there was one shul that did its own thing, and the rabbi was very liberal, didn't really care, didn't see it as an issue, and he hired a woman. And the question is, was United Synagogue going to throw out the shul? Now, United Synagogue wouldn't throw out any shul that paid dues
right.
in those days.
Right.
So it's like it was a backdoor thing where conservative shuls that were more liberal, more left-wing, were hiring women.
Right.
And the RA had no choice but to deal
to
with
go
it.
Along and the
seminary just went along with
the,
it.
The pressure out in the field was overwhelming, and that pressure ultimately reached the last bastion. You talk about Philadelphia, Queens had the most conservative rabbinate in the world, small c, conservative, pardon the pun. And even in Queens, a few years ago, they got rid of the one rabbi who remained, who was holding the fort, three synagogues combined, and now in the middle of Hillcrest, this beautiful property, you see the tremendous sign, Egalitarian Conservative Temple, massive parking lot open on Sabbath and holidays. And they come from all over.
The ruling caste of the conservative movement in the 70s and 80s, they weren't observant, but they held the line
right,
of tradition.
Right. But today you're a generation and a half later, and the kids know what the New York Times is. They don't know what tradition is.
You skimmed over the most important detail there. Three massive places in Hokkaido combined with each other. The same thing happened in Forest Hills. The reform in
right, I understand. They're losing out. Right. No, I understand. They're losing out because of the population switch. Okay, let me go one step further. 1986, the seminary celebrates 100 years of existence. New York Times has a tremendous article. Jewish Week has a tremendous article. 100 years is not a small matter. And they describe the seminary, it's a photograph of the seminary in words, 1986. Thursday morning, inside the six-story brick wall around 3080 Broadway, two Shacharit services are being held. Listen to the words carefully. A bare minion of young men, mostly rabbinical students, dressed in blue jeans and running shoes, are praying quietly in the JTS first floor chapel modeled on the Turo Synagogue in Newport, Rhode Island. You know what that synagogue is, one of the oldest synagogues in America, a synagogue that still functions until today, although it's more museum than synagogue.
This is Rabbi Finkelstein's minion.
Who's minion, you say?
Rabbi Finkelstein.
This is his minion.
Well, oh yeah, the seminary. I thought you were talking about Newport. Newport. What was the name of the rabbi? He just died this year. He had studied. With an American youngster, I understand, who went to Mir, studied in Mir. Two women across the mechitza offer their prayers. All the worship is at the long-standing traditional service with separate seating for men and women. Read from a potpourri of Orthodox prayer books scattered around. Okay, so this is the Orthodox minion, we'll call it, right?
Lean, Orthodox lean.
You barely have 10 men and two women behind the mechitza. Everyone uses a different sitter. It's like you walk into a shtibbel in Israel, you can pick up a Sephardic sitter, five different types, an Ashkenazic sitter, five different types, a Dr. Mizrach sitter, five different types. A louder sound, voices chanting and singing in Hebrew, come from a large hall one flight up. 30 people, half men, half women, are sitting together at the egalitarian service that is a recent addition. Some of the women are wearing talit and tefillin. One woman reads the Torah portion. Two others receive aliyat. All use a single conservative sitter published by the United Synagogue of America. Now, that description is very revealing. Where is the overwhelming majority? Where is the decorum? Where is the single sitter? Where is their unity? At the innovative prayer group. The Orthodox minion fading away. Does it still exist today? Does anyone know?
No, it doesn't
exist. It's unbelievable. But now we come. Yeah.
First of all, only 40 people total are davening shacharis in the morning.
Well, that's what it says. And notice also with the aliyah, there are three aliyah. Two women get the aliyah, and the baalat korei. Am I pronouncing that korei? How would you say it in Hebrew? The baalat korei is a woman, not a man. And again, it shows you the majority of the people of spirituality are women.
The two women are getting aliyot. One of them has, so what do they do with Kohanim and Levim?
They don't have Kohanim and Levim. They abolished it. Well, what's the big deal?
But they
abolished it. And it's not like the Shir HaDashim minyan, where you have Kohen Levi Yisrael, then you have woman, then you have Achron, either a man or a woman, and if it's a man, then the woman gets maftir, or vice versa. Now, this article is very revealing, and this comes to the point that Michael made. They interviewed the dean of the rabbinical school, Rabbi Gordon Tucker. Rabbi Gordon Tucker, if I'm not mistaken, was the first husband of Senator Lieberman's wife. Okay, so you're dealing here with an interesting individual, and he is interviewed about the school, and he says today it's an entirely different school, and he describes it, and he says, we don't get the so-called refugee students who had attended Orthodox yeshivas we used to get in the 40s and 50s. And this is one very important point. They interview Professor Avram Holtz. I believe his son lives in Israel and worked for the Abraham program for a while. He's become Hasidic. I see him at the Kotel occasionally on Friday night in a Bekesher and a Gatel. Professor Avram Holtz, a professor of modern Hebrew literature, says, quote, the student's body has a less Hebrew background than when he came to the school in 1955. They're not coming from traditional families. Teachers at the seminary a generation ago could assume a certain amount of knowledge or recall, Holtz said. That's not the same today. Religious words and phrases once universally recognized must be explained now. Remedial reading in Hebrew text is often necessary. Few reading assignments are given in Hebrew. And that's exactly what Michael said. That's exactly true. From my class, the class before me, the class after me, I still remember some of the top students going to the seminary. I don't recall one student that I taught, and there may probably have to be one or two exceptions, but beginning with BMT in 69, I don't recall one student who studied with me. There may be one student who wound up at the seminary. I don't recall anyone else. The head of the branch here, we quoted him in class, Galinkin, if I'm pronouncing his name right. David Galinkin. He studied with me in the early 70s. I'm talking about the Schechter. Neve Schechter. He may be the only one. Now, obviously, today you talk about a student at the seminary, a kid who went through yeshiva, high school, yeshiva, college, even if he had bad rebbeim and he couldn't get along with his rebbeim and he didn't like his rebbeim and he couldn't understand the Yiddish systems and couldn't understand where they were coming from. But when you mentioned to the kid, Yeish Shalom Midas, he understood what you were talking about. You mentioned the Machlokes and Bayan Rava. You mentioned the Shoma, the four Shomrim. I mean, these are basic concepts. Today at the seminary, if you mention a concept like that, the class is lost. What's their background? They're graduates of the finest universities. What do they know of Shas and Paiskim? You have to begin all over on a very elementary level. And I can tell you, Eidut Nemana, Et Chata'ai Ani Maskir Ahyom. I love to eavesdrop, because when someone speaks to me, I don't know if they're telling me the truth. They may be telling me what I want to hear. And I've learned this. I will never ask anyone for money for a good cause. And I only ask for a good cause, right? So I once remember I asked students for money. It was a dedication, a book they were putting out, etc. Immediately gave the dedication. I found out later they went home, their wives killed them. And they didn't know how to say to me, the women will give money to Amit, to Amun, if they want to be leaders there. But what are you giving them? Israel, Rakefetch, Rami, etc. So I learned, I got to be careful. I will never ask anyone, because they don't want to make me happy. I'm proud of that they want to make me happy. But it's not their real feeling. But when you eavesdrop, so if you recall, I once spoke about eavesdropping in my lectures on women and halacha years ago, but I'll tell you another time I eavesdropped. It has to be the mid-80s. My children, some had married, were getting married. I mean, we still had children at home. It has to be early 80s, mid-80s, because my children got married like one after another very quickly. Our house emptied out, which is good and bad. You don't have time to adjust. So we went out for pizza. We went out to pizza. The restaurant, which today is Glatt Trey for Chilul Hashem, the Savion, right opposite the Prime Minister. Yeah, at that point, it had stopped being a milkica restaurant, a fish restaurant. Yeah. It was
changing.
It was always changing. Now, without a Hechsher and Chazer and Treif and Chametz, they keep in business. But wow, so they're not the only one, unfortunately,
yeah.
But it's amazing how they keep in business. And right opposite the Prime Minister, right around the corner from Heichal Shlomo, the great synagogue. I pass it every Friday night when I come back from the Kotel.
What's the
Ramban,
Ben Maimon.
Ben Maimon.
That's where there was the explosion.
The explosion years ago. So anyway, we're sitting at pizza, and listen to me. You got to feel it. And the next table, it was before the summer, is a whole group of conservative rabbis planning the summer curriculum for the kids who were coming with United Synagogue.
The Ramah camps.
They're across the street, a block. And I'm eavesdropping. I'm sitting at my table, and they're right next to me, and I'm listening. I tell you, it's unbelievable. They're playing, and then this woman, rabbi student, maybe she was Emmy Eilberg, because there weren't too many at that time yet, and I hear her say, "But one thing we have to be certain: we are not going to have any Talmud. It's the most boring subject I have ever studied." Quote and quote. I want to tell you, she's right. If you start studying Gemara at the age of 23, when you're finished with the bachelor's, you're finished with the master's, and you haven't all your life been introduced to Abaye and Rava and what Gemara's about and how it sharpens the mind and the cases and the torts and all that happens, I don't blame her. The most boring subject I had at the seminary, and that is exactly the point that Tucker and the others are making. The seminary student body has changed. The whole environment has changed. Shifting atmosphere, shifting environment, shifting milieu. Life does not stand still. Not for the seminary, not for Yeshiva University, not for Lakewood. Not for mere yeshiva. I understand the shayur was given yesterday by a reliable person with all the sources that if you walked into mere, a student not married with a beard 110 years ago, you were told to take the beard off or you were tossed out. If you walked into mere with your tzitzit sticking out, you were told to put them in or go to a different yeshiva. Today, if you walk into me without a beard or without your tzitzit sticking out, you are asked, go study with Rakefet. Don't darken our atmosphere. Times have changed. They've changed at the seminary and elsewhere. Sorsch is interviewed. I'll end off with this. Sorsch agrees that he's talking about we want to be more observant. We want to be more than the reform movement. And here is Sorsch. Sorsch agrees that the seminary zeal for observance has not spread to most people who identify as conservative Jews. He tells of a visit to a conservative synagogue of 300 families. Only one family kept the Sabbath and dietary laws. Sorsch was told by the synagogue's rabbi, that's the problem, in a nutshell. I end off, out of my own life, with a story. I believe I've told it before, but I tell it again in context. When I rabbinated in Philadelphia, 61, 62, 50 years ago, so I told you I became quite friendly with Moshe Greenberg, who was a wonderful, wonderful congregant, Zichrono Livracha. He was orthoprax, although he was not orthodox.
He was the one on
through Moshe.
He was the professor
At U of P and then at Hebrew U. Through Moshe, I met his father. His father, of course, was very well known, Rabbi Simon Greenberg, the vice chancellor of the seminary. He was to Professor Finkelstein what Rabbi Israel Miller was to Rabbi Belkin and Rabbi Lamb. It was the same type of relationship. We became friendly. Now, one time we're talking about the driving the shul problem. And, of course, I took a negative view of the tshuva, the responsum that permitted it. And Professor Greenberg said to me, the problem is not that we permitted it. The problem is that even after we permitted it, the synagogues, the temples, are absolutely empty on the Sabbath and on the festivals, unless we have a bar mitzvah or a special simcha. And boy, did he hit the nail on the head. And that's the seminary at that moment. We've seen the rabbis, we've seen the chazaniyot. We have one more step to go in one more major innovation, and then we hit Chancellor Arnold Eisen and the tremendous halachic question, how do we relate to these people? And it will open up a world of thoughts for you, even though I claim I'm not overly interested in Jewish philosophy, but at times Jewish philosophy and theology interact and intermingle and interconnect with the halacha. Then I want to deal with part of that concept, give you the mind framework of an irreligious Jew. That for those of you who have grown up from and have grown up in day schools and have gone to good yeshiva high schools and have had wonderful rebbeim and come to Israel, and you don't even start to understand the way an irreligious Jew thinks. From there, we come in to Chovevei Torah. And why Rakefet does not sleep at night? From there, we sail in to the concept of a counter-reaction and why Rakefet is angry, why he is so upset with some aspects, thinking, deeds of the Haredi world. And we'll end off with caution. Nevertheless, boundaries are boundaries. From there, I sail into what perhaps are my most important lectures ever, Holocaust, Zionism, Torah Jewry today, Das Torah. What I'm talking about now carries us well into next year. The Sunday class, you have to admit that there was some in Rosh. It's amazing with the Rambam. Wait till I want to show you next week with the Rambam. Here he praises Aristotle, and next week you'll see how he attacks the Rambam and Creed. And believe me, even Mendel, Breitstein, or Evan Mabhik, you have to figure out the exact way to translate your name to Hebrew, will admit Moshe Mendelssohn comes to life through this particular tshuva. Gentlemen, it is a great pleasure to teach Torah and Modeh LaKadosh Baruch Hu. What did we do today? The heart of today is we've gone one more step from rabbis to chazaniyot, the traditional Rabbi Ronald Price, and the whatever he calls his institute, the organization drops the name traditional, the conservative, the traditional Jewish organization, the rabbinic seminary. There's no question that the chazaniyot issue gives them another issue and empowers them. Fascinating is the picture of the seminary at 100 years, the little Orthodox minion that still survives, and the in-minion, egalitarianism, women taking over the Jewish clergy, no longer yeshiva boys, all those comments, and we ended off with all that we have permitted, still there is no observance whatsoever. I have something amazing here. Give me that printout, the book. Okay. Gentlemen, This is an article or a talk by Dennis Prager.
Ooh.
It is required reading.
Okay.
It is a replay of many of the concepts I said in Shia today. I'll tell you, this Dennis Prager, it's amazing that the guy is not a total Shema Torah mitzvah. It's a shame. We lost him.
He is a great communicator.
YouTube on marriage.
He has such insight in this article. It's about general universities, how everyone criticizes the yeshivas. We turn out narrow-minded people. First of all, I don't believe my students are narrow-minded. But even if it's true, he says the universities turn out worse narrow-minded people. Liberalism, humanism, homosexuality. If you don't believe in it, you're a fascist, you're bad, you're no good. If anyone has a friend who's on in years, this is a beautiful book on sources and Shas Paiskim, general literature about growing older. Very sensitive and beautiful. Once again, I offer Divrei Torah Nishma on Parshat HaShavua for many Parshiyot. It comes from a YU graduate who functions in Toronto. He is excellent, inside, up to date, hand on the pulse. No, this over here is Hech. This is from Toronto. It's very, very nice. And once again, I wish you could read modern Hebrew. This is from Degel HaTeira's newspaper, Yateid Ne'aman. It's about the Litvisha world, Litvisha Divrei Torah. It's fascinating, not bad, worth reading. To have Rav Shachem here, Rav Yashiv, nice Divrei Torah. And here, the middle of this section is fabulous. It shows you how the Litvisha Welt is becoming Hasidic. Until we meet again in health and happiness, Das Vedanya.
I can talk to you when the microphones are off.
The microphone, David's right here, the microphone is off.